we are now at 5 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and go into our pre-council meeting.
They just don't know.
They're good, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I keep wondering, why is nobody else there?
Okay. All right, we are kicking off our labor group presentations. Up first, we have the Columbia Police Lieutenants Association. Just for those here, we have presentations by four different unions today, and then we will go into closed sessions for discussion. So, 15 minutes, Clint. You got it?
10.
Oh, even better.
I was told 10.
Oh, wait, 10. 10. Kidding. 10.
Don't mess up.
Wait, do I get 15?
You get 10, and then hopefully...
We are not negotiating right now.
Not set a precedent.
No. All right.
Right. Good evening. My name is Clint Sinclair. I'm a lieutenant with the Columbia Police Officer. Lieutenants Association, sorry, one of their representatives, will go through our goals and objectives for collective bargaining this year. So overall, our main focus is going to be immediate equity in our position, as well as goals and objectives that will focus on long-term department organizational development, and that can explain that as we go through. Our first topic is compensation. On the goals and objectives that we submitted prior, we did not have any information from the classification and compensation study, so that was left pretty much to be determined based on what that study said. We have some little insight now into what that's going to say, and as far as compensation goes, our overall goal is to increase the pay difference between police sergeants and police lieutenants. And see some of the points up there. Some lieutenants have actually taken a decrease in pay once promoted to lieutenant because we're moving from an hourly or a non-exempt status to an exempt status. We have people who are turning down or not seeking promotion to the rank of lieutenant because of the lack of benefit, particularly in compensation. It should be difficult to out-earn a supervisor. There are some sergeants who only need to work 78 hours of overtime in one calendar year to out-earn their supervisor, which would be the police lieutenant. And after hearing the peer studies that were reviewed for class and the class and comp study, we believe that they are insufficient metrics to compare the police department to as far as pay ranges, midpoints, things like that. We feel that workforce competition marketplace is significantly better when it comes to public safety. Essentially, we are not competing with Norman, Oklahoma, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama for police officers. We're competing with Jefferson City, we're competing with St. Louis, we're competing with Springfield and Joplin. Jeff City, for example, there is a police lieutenant there who makes over $100,000 a year. The city is one-third the size of Columbia, the department's one-third the size. Essentially, they would have one-third the responsibility of a lieutenant compared to Columbia, and yet they out-earn all police lieutenants in Columbia. So some information from the last 5 years. The top three pensions paid out currently, or those that are in the drop program, the top three are sergeants. Because they are hourly, the overtime does factor into their pension. 60% of sergeants out-earn at least one lieutenant in retirement. And when you compare the four lieutenants that are currently either retired in the last 5 years or in the drop program, they're within a $100 range of six sergeants. The biggest gap we see here, lieutenant on average earns only 2.8% more in their monthly pension than a sergeant, whereas you get above lieutenant and the gap widens to 32%. So 2.8 between sergeant and lieutenant, lieutenant to assistant chief and higher is a 32% gap. We feel that that needs to be evened out. Essentially, promoting to lieutenant should ensure a higher pension, that closer to what our supervisors are making. Not all the way to that level, but much higher than it is now. The second thing we're looking for is a fully integrated collective bargaining agreement, similar to what we had back in 2017, the last time the Columbia Police Officers, Police Lieutenants Association, had a collective bargaining agreement. We're looking for probably a duration of 1 year to start, maybe with longer durations in the future after that first contract. Deferred compensation, back in 2012, CPOA negotiated away the deferred compensation match offered by the city to police department employees in exchange for a tiered retirement system. Essentially, we'll give up the 401A match or the deferred compensation match in exchange for the 25-year retirement plan for hires, as well as some other benefits. Police lieutenants are not represented by CPOA. We are not part of their bargaining unit, so essentially they were able to negotiate away benefits for everybody in exchange for that new retirement system. So we're asking that be brought back for lieutenant and higher. Essentially, we're trying to create incentives to promote, right? To take on leadership roles and to help the department grow and develop. Healthcare, once again, really incentivizing the promotion. We're looking for post-employment healthcare after the completion of the full service requirements or a medical retirement. Looking for substantially the same as current employees, paying a premium for an individual or family. There are several different entities around the country that do offer something like this. Vacation accrual. Currently, police lieutenants do have a cap on their vacation accrual. We're looking to have that removed. Assistant chiefs, the next level above lieutenant, they do not have a cap on their vacation accruals. And the city has commented, we don't want to treat lieutenants like hourly employees. This is one way that they cannot treat us like hourly employees, is to remove the cap on our accrual limits. Also, when you're promoted to the rank of lieutenant, you lose the comp bank, time the 160 hours that you can bank at overtime rate. So removing the limits on our vacation accruals will also incentivize people to promote and no longer treat us as similar to hourly employees. And vehicles, this is the last one. We're looking for to work with the city on establishing appropriate vehicles for our roles as police lieutenants. We have very specific job functions that we have to do as lieutenants and run the city basically at any time, run critical incidents that we've seen here as of late. And currently the vehicles that were assigned through the department are not sufficient to do that. They just simply do not allow us to complete a job function. We encountered this with the thankfully false report of an active shooter at Battle High School. When that happened several weeks ago, the watch commander on duty, he did not have the equipment he needed to adequately run that incident. And if something were to happen, would not have that capability based on the vehicles that we have. So we're looking for new vehicles for the police lieutenants, designed and outfitted with input from us. We have some specifications that we can go into during negotiations, and then retain that ability to have that take-home vehicle or a monthly vehicle. So that's all we have. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
All right, questions for this? And remember, we're not negotiating their contract, because you all do that, but we get questions answered. Yes.
I have a question about your health insurance. So if you retire at either 20 years or 25 years, what's different about what you're eligible for compared to our other employees? There is no health insurance for you to buy into?
As far as city provided?
Yes.
No, we do not have that. So we basically, when you retire, there's, and I don't know all the options that are out there, but we're looking for the city to continue to cover our health insurance the same way we would be if we were active employees.
And so, oh, if you're active employees. So when other employees retire, is there health insurance for them until they reach, I think it's the magic Medicare age?
I don't know about other departments. We're looking to negotiate for us.
Sure. And so are you looking to join the pool, or you're looking for the city to continue to subsidize?
We're looking for the subsidy.
Okay.
To continue to,
okay,
to pay the premiums that an active city employee would pay.
Okay.
The same amount of coverage.
Yeah, Andrew.
Oh, sorry, I'll let you.
Andrew.
What's your current vacation accrual limit?
It depends on your years of service.
Okay.
So at 13 years, I'm maxed out at 240 hours of vacation, and that, like I said, that varies based on time.
Thank you.
All right. Betsy, you had a question?
I did. Do you know anything about Jeff City's pension plan? Since you say they pay their police officers so much more than we
I do. Don't. I know that our pension is unique as far as the 20 and then the 25. That's one thing that used to make CP very competitive in the job market. But I think, are they in loggers? I believe Jeff City, they may be in loggers.
So would you guys be, I appreciate it, but you know,
that has a good
idea. for a pay raise, or you guys haven't thought about that, or I shouldn't step into that?
We can talk about that in the research. I can tell you my answer, but I probably shouldn't.
Can you say more about the car situation, not being able to set up the command?
Yeah, so I'm the SWAT commander, and I actually have the only vehicle that's capable that's set up for a command post. I can essentially open the back tailgate, back hatch of my Tahoe, and I have access to a large whiteboard. I have two radios in the back. I can run incident command from there. Right now, most of our lieutenants are assigned vehicles that they're at the end of their life, high miles. They're all torn up. They have cages in the back where mine doesn't, so I can't put anybody in the back seat to help run incident command. And none of them have the command center in the back of the vehicle. So essentially, a police lieutenant is working out of the same vehicle as a police officer responding to the call when that lieutenant has to manage the entire scene and all the resources and personnel. And as a SWAT commander, I can say that my command post vehicle has been a lifesaver on a lot of these incidents, being able to write things down, use multiple radios, have all that available to me.
Is that the only difference between the vehicles, is the command unit in the back?
And the cage in the back seat. So my vehicle, because I'm comparing my vehicle because it has the command post set up. I can't transport prisoners in my vehicle. I have a normal back seat as any SUV would. But that's the main difference, yes. The ones that the other lieutenants are assigned are basically ones that the police officers and patrol officers have worn down to the end of their life, and then they kind of get cycled through to the lieutenants as they are taken out of service.
All right, any other questions for Lieutenant Smith before we move on to CPOA? Net Zero Day? All right, thank you, Clint, appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, moving on, we've got our Columbia Police Officers Association, right?
Yes.
I was like, my letters. Acronym. Do you have our next acronym?
Good evening. Don Weaver, General Counsel to the Columbia Police Officers Association. Thanks for taking a few minutes. I'll give you back most of your 10 minutes, I promise. Just going to hit some highlights. We're up for a full contract renegotiation, so there's a lot of, less significant items that we'll be discussing during bargaining. But there's three I'd like to draw your attention to and kind of hit on tonight. First, our goal this year for collective bargaining, as it has been in years past, is that we want to do everything we can, and we want to help the city do everything the city can to attract and retain only the best and the brightest to be Columbia police officers. And I think that's a shared goal with everyone in this room. And a few impediments to that, or a few areas I think we can improve. First is pay. And it's not just starting pay. So we want to ensure competitive pay, obviously to help us attract folks, but we also want to make sure that our pay scale, our pay structure, rewards longevity. And so what we mean more specifically here is we're looking for a pay step plan and an across-the-board cost of living or increase. And so a pay step plan, I know we've talked about it in years past. We have yet to adopt a pay step plan for the police department. And I've spoken with several of you about that separately, but basically we want to make sure that we don't have a situation reoccur that we had just a couple years ago where we had somebody literally with 19 years of service on the police department. That was making 27 cents an hour difference than someone who had 3 years on the police department. The second issue, it's really a big issue. We really want a neutral, fair, and unbiased outside review of all police discipline. And so what we're looking for here is what's referred to in the business as binding arbitration. We want, we know there's all kinds of processes internally, but at the end of the day, there's at least a slight imaginary potential that some outside groups might exert some kind of political or other influence in the community, maybe even over some of our civilian reboard members or maybe some of our council members. Of course, nothing like that's gone on thus far, but we're looking towards the future, and we want to help make sure that doesn't happen in the future. And so we know whatever process the city lands on for civilian review, for civilian oversight, and whatever process we land on for internal discipline, we just want to check on that to make sure they get it right. That's it. We're just asking for an arbitrator to weigh in, an arbitrator from external, from somewhere far away, who has no ties to the community, who didn't campaign for office in the community, who isn't appointed by people who campaigned in the community, and who aren't using the CPRB for broader political aspirations or otherwise. Just make sure we get it right. The officers can know that their actions will be judged solely, squarely, based on was it reasonable, was their actions reasonable based on what they knew at the time, considering their training and experience, without regard to any external influence. That's all we're asking for here. And third, it's really an issue that affects many other city departments. And we really are interested in increased overtime rate, other than what we have now, which is just standard time and a half for most overtime. For profit or short notice for profit special events, we'd like the city to pass on the cost of this onto the for profit special event sponsors, if you will. So obviously, every cop, every firefighter knows they're going to be called upon to work overtime when the community is, you know, out of hand and they need more resources. What we're talking about here is really narrowly focused on special events. So there's been a few kind of recent examples where private bar owners might have some kind of a downtown festival, and you're asking officers, you're forcing officers to get rid of their days off and come in and work, which is fine, but we shouldn't be basically burdening these officers, taking away days off they have with their family in order to support for-profit ventures. And if we do, and I understand why we might, we just ask that you compensate those officers something more than time and a half. And really, the city can pass along that cost to the profiteers, if you will. And again, I think this also impacts fire, maybe water and light, to some degree. Anyway, those are the three items I wanted to bring to your attention. I'll yield to any inquiries you may have.
All right, questions for Don? Yeah, Matt.
Remind me what you guys did with pay last year. Did you sort of take a step toward a step plan?
So 2 years ago, we made some adjustments that would have facilitated a step plan. We got, I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but I think somewhere near 75% of the way there. And last year we paused. The city wanted to pause on that while the city had a salary study done. So we're holding there. Mm-hmm. We're still, I'd say, more than half of the way there. We just have that final piece to finish.
Okay.
To item two.
Yes, sir.
So I'm wondering what this looks like in compared to what we do now.
Okay. So what we do now for police officer discipline, if it's, I'll say, serious, if it involves a loss of pay, a demotion, a suspension, or termination, there's a process wherein the officer that's disciplined can appeal that to the Personnel Advisory Board, which is a board appointed by, I think, the Human Resources Department? No?
Council.
City Council?
Council.
Appointed by you guys? Okay. and this board serves without compensation, as I understand it, and they will hear an appeal, and they will render or tender a recommendation to the city manager. Their decision, the PAB's decision, is not binding on anyone. The decision solely rests with the city manager at all points. And so what we're afraid of is some future state where we, of course, have a different city manager and maybe a different council, maybe a different CPRB, who might bend to some political pressure and make a decision that might placate the masses, but might be incorrect based on the actual facts of the incident. And so what that would look like now is we would get rid of the PAB. Not get rid of it, but the officers would not go to the PAB, or they would go to the PAB and go to the city manager, and then after that, we would submit the matter to binding arbitration. The city and the employee would both present their case to a fair, neutral, unbiased outside arbitrator who would render a decision. And that would ensure that any improper political or other pressures won't impact the decision. Because right now, the reality is this man is appointed by you. You all are elected. And there are people in the community who might have strong opinions given the, a certain... we'll say tragic situation that might occur. You can all imagine what I'm talking about. And so we're just trying to make sure that, hey, everyone has their say, everyone gets their input, but at the end of the day, The officers are just judged on the facts, what they knew, how they were trained, and was their response reasonable. And there's a lot of cities that do this, by the way.
Other questions for Don? Then I guess I just have one clarifying question. On the third bullet, because we're just going to hit them all, for the, you mentioned short notice. So long,
Well, we put this a little bit vague on purpose.
Okay.
There's a process how a special event sponsor might obtain permits, et cetera.
And quick question. We do have police does serve on the special events committee, correct?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't have
Sorry.
The answer to that.
Okay.
But basically, the officers, they understand that there might be, they might need to cancel their days off, their family vacations, whatever, with some degree of notice. But if, basically, at some point, it becomes unreasonable to expect the officers on their very limited time off to, sorry, you have to come into work.
Yeah.
Or ultimately, in support of a for-profit venture.
Okay.
So obviously, the definition of short notice
would
need some massaging, and I think we could come up with something that we would agree upon in negotiation.
Okay.
You know, a few hours, 48 hours for sure, maybe a week. I don't know, something like that.
Okay.
Whereas if there's longer periods of time, then I don't think the officers would expect.
You can schedule. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. All right. Any other questions for Don? No, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, up next we have fire. I put them at the end.
We can get all public safety out of here.
All right. Good evening. I'm Zach Gravett. I'm the president of the Columbia Professional Firefighters. I've been in this room since we started collective bargaining. So this year we only have a limited amount of items that were left open in last year's contract. Last year we had a full contract. This year we only have a few items left. Those are our overall compensation, standby compensation, which will affect other employees in the city. The Missouri Cancer Trust, which we talked about last year, and then we have a little bit of issue on promotions. Most of it's been dealt with already, but we will need an agreement from the city to fix that. So currently our members continue to be very satisfied with our pay plan, the way we are paid. We don't want that to change. We don't intend for that to change. However, everybody's well aware, inflation rates, health insurance premiums, CPI, all those things have come in to have an effect on how much money our members take home. So we're going to be looking to move steps. Obviously, that keeps from compressing members within grades. This plan, as it's designed, keeps from compression between two different grades. But we don't want to get a bunch of people packed in together at the same in the same grade. So we'll need to make some adjustments in terms of step moves, across the board adjustments to adjust for CPI, inflation. We'll talk about that more in just a second, and then. We would love to have an agreement that goes for the length of the contract. Year-to-year bargaining is fine with me. We've been successful with it, but I think we can show a commitment to our current and future employees if we can say, hey, we're going to commit to not only your pay raise this year, but your pay raise next year and potentially longer on down the line. And when we talk about recruitment and retention, that's something that people are looking for, is what is the commitment the city's giving me longer term? So. When it comes to compensation, obviously the CPI, this was in November's numbers, 7.1%. I think December's numbers came in like total adjusted was 6.5%. That's the increase of prices that we pay for goods and services. The state of Missouri last year, 7.5% increase to their employees. This year they're going to recommend an 8.7% increase to their employees. And then the federal government is going to recommend an 8.7% increase for the cost of living adjustment for the feds. So when we talk about what we're comparing, what's happening around us, and recruitment and retention, these are the numbers that are going on in the world around us right now. And we are going to have to keep up with those numbers in order to recruit and retain new employees in the future. So we'll be looking to use those numbers as a basis for the proposals that we submit. On standby pay, Chapter 1997 lists our standby pay. It's been long discussed. I think that the city, from my discussions with you guys before, it's been a long-standing issue. Currently, members who are on standby, no matter what department you're in, get $15 a day to stay at home and not do anything. And then they're called in on a minimum 3-hour overtime. And $15 a day is just completely unreasonable to ask somebody to answer their phone, be available 24 hours a day. It goes to 20 on a holiday. So we'll be looking for a substantial increase to this. Obviously, this is the language taken right out of Chapter 1997. So they got to be ready, answer their phones. So we also, we have two potential proposals that we can discuss in this. First would be obviously just a simple increase to the compensation, right? Or in the fire department specifically, we could change the way we only have our assistant fire marshals that are that fall under this provision of the code. So we could potentially change their schedule to where we mostly negate the need for standby compensation in our department. If they work, you know, a shift schedule like we did in a 56-hour world, they're on duty 24 hours a day, 365. We wouldn't need to have somebody on standby for those hours that are not working 40-hour weeks. So that's a potential we could look at. The critical illness trust, why we're not here already, I don't know. I'll show you some numbers in a minute that are pretty astounding. But 2021, the critical illness trust went into effect. It's basically a cancer trust for our members. It's somewhat a presumptive cancer benefit. It takes the burden off the city. We pay into the trust, and then any benefits paid out of that are 100% reduced by any benefit that they may receive from the city in a potential work comp claim later on. So the city's not out any money other than the premiums we pay into the trust to cover our members. The max coverage is $300,000 for full-time firefighters. It does reduce the necessity for an employee to potentially file a work comp claim later on down the line. If you're not familiar with the work comp system, it's a convoluted disaster in reality. It takes time, it takes a lot of money, and it takes a lot of energy. And when a person's diagnosed with cancer, potentially towards the end of their life, with a cancer diagnosis, that's the last thing we want to put them through. So this got messed up, but these are the, you know, some of the percentages, increased incidence and cancer in firefighters. Those numbers don't lie. Down at the bottom, overall, 9% more likely to be diagnosed with cancer and 14% more likely to die from cancer. That's just the nature of our business. We're doing everything we can to take care of ourselves, wash our gear, clean ourselves off. Keep the gear away from us as much as possible, but this is reality. This is what we face. And so this benefit is something that will help our members long term, and why we're not there is, I don't know, to me. So a couple advantages to the city. Obviously, employee relations, caps on losses, affordable rates. It's member-owned, it's locally funded, it stays in the state of Missouri, and some reduced financial burden on the city. And then, you know, obviously for the firefighters, we don't have to have invasive investigations for insurance and doctors. We'll get faster payouts. As soon as you're diagnosed, you apply, you get this, probably within a month, you're going to be getting your first paychecks from this pool to help you pay for those, you know, costs that are associated with it, and cover 17 types of cancers. As of when I got numbers in November, December, 1,334 firefighters in 36 different departments are included in this. It does pay, or it does cover you for up to 15 years after you retire, which is where we see here in Columbia most of our retirees, or most of our cancer diagnosis. We got a few of our members, former members right now, dealing with cancer in various forms. So, and then like I said, the max payout for that, the max coverage is $300,000, and it costs $142 per person a year. Total of 20-some thousand dollars to the city a year to make sure that our guys are covered, so. And then promotions. Like I said, we identified some issues in recent promotional processes. We met with the HR department, fire chief, and have sat down. We've discussed some of those problems. We just need an agreement from the city to open this section of the contract, which was not normally open, and codify those solutions that we came up with into the agreement and finalize it. So, physical note, about $1 million for pay, depending on what we come up to. Standby compensation, again, depending on what the agreement is, if we move people into a 56-hour marshal position, that could be as low as $18,000 a year. Increase to the current provisions, obviously, if that happens, that's going to be substantially more. So whatever the agreement comes down to. And then, like I said, the Cancer Trust, $22,000 a year covers all of our members. Small price to pay for one of our firefighters dying line duty from cancer. And I don't think that I'm going to be the first or the last to say that recruitment and retention is the priority number one for the city, right? Everybody's talking about it. So we are going to have to take some bold actions to show that we care about our employees and that we're ready to take care of them long term. And our current staff will be our best recruitment tool going forward. So somebody asked me, Chief's in the room, he's the one that always asked me, how do we best serve our customer? And I'm going to tell you all that the best way we serve our customer is by serving us and the guys that are riding the fire trucks and police cars in this city. If we take care of them, they will take care of the citizens, and they'll take care of us in terms of recruitment and retention. So that's what I got for you. Any questions?
Thank you, Zach.
You're welcome.
Any questions for Zach?
I guess on the standby, like how often are you required to be on standby?
And so they're on a rotating basis, but 24 hours a day, or they're on call every day. So they don't work like we do in the 56-hour world. So those guys work 40 hours. They're 5 days a week or 4 days a week, and they're on call every night. There's somebody on call to respond in, to investigate, take care of fire marshal duties.
Okay, but what about you guys?
We're not on call. We're in the station staff full time. So this is a fire marshal.
Is it just for fire marshals?
Yeah, they're the only people in our department that this provision applies to.
So you're not on. So you guys aren't on standby for overtime or anything like that?
No, we get paid overtime if we have to work overtime shifts, but we're not on standby awaiting a call.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, Nick.
What's the time period for someone who's on call?
Well, it depends. If they're working 4/10s, they have a day off during the week, and so they would be on call. They would be on shift any hours that they're not on their normal daily shift. And if they're in a 40-hour week on 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, then they're on call from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. the next morning. So it's roughly 16 hours a day is the easy way to do that.
So during the evening and nighttime hours, not during the day, just
during the daytime, they're on their normal. There's somebody on their normal shift, and, okay, and they're there to cover the city while they're on their normal shift. Gotcha.
And they just have to be available by phone and be able
when they're on standby, yes.
Any other questions for Zach? I guess my one was on, when you gave the example of the consumer price index, and you talked about the state of Missouri,
yeah,
and like the percentages that they increased for theirs.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was following it loosely, but I mean, wasn't also part of that because they had not had increases in for so long?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that
okay,
everybody's in the same boat,
well,
right?
Yeah,
nobody's keeping up with wages where they should
right
be. But yeah, so I think in 2022, there was a pretty substantial increase because of being behind,
yeah,
which we're going to find out through our comp study where we are at.
Yeah.
But also, you know, they're making another big adjustment in 2023 as well, or recommending. Now, this is not approved or anything. This is what the governor's going to recommend.
Yeah, Andrea.
If you were to use all of these things as a recruit and retain tool, how quickly does that go into effect? Because you guys recruit in classes. I don't know when the next one is, but.
So we have class currently going on, and then we're basically in somewhat of an open application. You know, when we can get the application posted, we'll get it up, and we'll take applications until, you know, a certain deadline, and then we'll use that list. As far as this data, I mean, I think any time that I can go to anybody and say, hey, for the past X amount of years, we've kept up with not only our wages, inflation rates, we've kept up with all of the measurables that we need to, but also the city next door or the city over there, then that allows people to look at the city of Columbia and say, I want to work there. They're taking care of their people. I know that I can stay home potentially, or I can come to this community and they're going to take care of me long term as well. So I think that's where we use this data. And
yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Zach? All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we've got Local 955. Andrew?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Andrew Hutchinson. I'm the union staff, union representative for Laborers Local 955. So we have a full contract negotiation this year. I think the other labor unions hit on pay pretty well. And actually, what I want to spend the bulk of this time with today are our priorities for the actual contract itself. So I'm going to go into these all in a bit more detail. So adjusting the grievance process, standardizing discipline and city policy across departments, paid family leave, bereavement leave, or sometimes you'll hear it called funeral leave, transitioning from a midpoint system to a step-based system, emergency pay raises, as well as bargaining over the comp study, and finally ending pre-employment drug testing. So number one, the current grievance and disciplinary review slash complaint system, our grievances, and I'm going to use the term grievance to refer to all three of these because the city splits it up. They take an incredibly long time to be settled. Sometimes it's 1 to 3 months, sometimes close to 6 months. So our big solution to this is that we want to combine all three of those processes into one process and having it end in third-party binding arbitration. So right now, and we heard this talked about earlier, the current processes for us as well end with the city having the final say. And I'll say third-party binding arbitration is something that exists in other contracts, and I'm happy to share those. It's pretty indicative of making sure that the union and the city, the worker and the employer, are on an equal footing. And the way that we look at this is that, you know, the cost of binding arbitration is always shared equally by the city and the union, which means no one is going to pursue cases that they are not clear has merit and is worth being discussed, because it's too big of a financial hit to, you know, do something just to spite the other side. So binding arbitration keeps us both clear. Standardizing disciplinary policy. So what we are wanting is to take as much discipline and attendance policy and put this inside of the CBA. There's a great example here. Attendance policies, even within departments, vary pretty widely. The example I list here, bus drivers, only a certain amount of bus drivers are supposed to be off at one time, while in the exact same department in public works, there's never been, to our knowledge, any limit on how much sick leave can be used, how many people can be off at one time, and that is within the same department. So what we're wanting to make sure is that the amazing benefits that the city has to offer are actually offered and utilized by departments in similar ways. It's standardizing, it's creating equity across departments. So we're asking the city to bargain in good faith and place policies relating to pay, benefits, and working conditions in our CBA. So we're not looking through Chapter 19 or administrative rules, but we have it clearly laid out in the CBA. So when an employee calls me and says, this happened, I can look directly to the contract and say, nope, the city did exactly what they're supposed to do. Show up to work next time, or whatever the case may be. Number three, this is something we've talked about in wage openers over the last couple of years, and this is a very key issue. Paid family leave and bereavement leave, we talked about funeral and bereavement leave the last couple of times, so I'll go into that first. So in all of our other contracts in the public sector, we have bereavement leave separate from vacation and sick. Our members view this as a safety concern. No one should be counting sick days or vacation days or having to go without pay and having to make these calculations when they're burying a parent, when they're burying a child, burying a sibling. The city, our members, by and large, are CDL workers. The city does not want employees who have recently buried a parent or child to be driving heavy machinery. We saw this come out a lot in the aftermath of COVID. We had bus drivers who buried multiple parents who exhausted their sick leave burying their family. And at that time, we were told, you know, well, COVID's going to be over soon. We're not going to have to deal with this as much. It's still around. It's still harming our members and their families. And we want to make sure that bereavement leave and funeral leave is an easy way for the city to reward employees for their loyalty. And we've seen that employers that offer it can greatly increase retention, not so much recruitment. paid family leave. We've shared data with individual council members. We've had members very clearly bring up to us having a child and having to calculate sick leave, especially for folks who are relatively new hires, find that paid family leave benefits, similar to the ones passed in St. Louis City or St. Louis County, those are two different policies, is a great way to retain folks who are starting with younger families. Having it separate from sick and vacation time would pave the way to making the city, moving it from, you know, trying to keep in line with market and having it be the employer of choice that it used to be. So pay, obviously, market adjustments in the comp study. We received some of those preliminary numbers and offered our feedback last week. We absolutely want to see large market adjustments, but what we are seeing specifically with the midpoints system is that our members view the midpoint system as once you hit that 5 years, it doesn't matter that the end of the scale may be significantly higher than that midpoint mark. With cost of living adjustments, you will never hit the top of your scale. So we are asking specifically to move to a step-based system similar to the IAFF contract, because our members want to know, how can I actually top out at the end of my scale, and how can I get raises for time of service? How can we tell our employees very clearly, this is roughly where you're going to be in 10 years, and keep goals beyond the five-year mark? We firmly believe that implementing something like this, based on surveys and town halls we've had with our membership, will continue to retain staff and recruit new staff when they can very clearly see where their wages are going to be over 10 years. We see that the staffing issues in the city are at a tipping point. I think the recent very depressing, very sad work session that we had about transit really illustrates this. We are seeing cuts in city services. I think there was a council member who brought up that recycling moving to every other week was originally a temporary cut. And here we are. We are very concerned that, well, one of our stewards, who's actually in the room with us today, brought up to me that we hadn't hired a mechanic in 3 years at the city. We're at 50% vacancy and we haven't hired a mechanic in 3 years. We are hitting a point where, as people continue to retire and phase out, we're going to hit major, major staffing issues. We've already seen some cuts in service. So we're asking for the city to bargain with us about emergency pay raises as soon as possible. The last part here about end of pre-employment drug testing. So we're not asking for that to be applied to the CDL positions. We understand that that's controlled by laws outside of the city's jurisdiction. What we are finding, though, is that employees who do this various jobs for the city through third-party temp agencies will apply to the city, get an interview, drug test, fail the drug test, and show up the next day to work as a temp worker at the City of Columbia. So right now, the city's status quo policy is it is okay if you test positive for drug use. You just need to be through a temp agency, and you won't receive benefits or a pension. And that is uncomfortable, and we have to sit with it, and we have to fix it, because it's either one way or the other. No drugs at the city, or with the new advent of adult use marijuana, what are the ways that we can work to make the city a less punitive, less overarching way to work, and start really having serious conversations? Do we care if certain positions are not drug tested? And from the point of view of our members who don't operate CDL vehicles, it's the way the rest of the world is going. And we consider it a pretty severe barrier, especially to folks in my generation, unfortunately. That's all I got today. We're really hitting the contract issues, and we'll leave pay for discussions with the city. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, Pat.
What's the status of standby pay with your members?
It is the same as Zach had mentioned. It is $15 a day.
And is there a rotating, so if you're a mechanic, which may be called in on a short notice,
Are they all on standby all the time, or is there a schedule that they get assigned to standby?
It's interesting you say mechanics, because that's a whole other bag of worms. So mechanics are not typically on standby because, okay, except in winter weather conditions. And yes, there is a whole scheduling process there. The people you're going to see on standby of our members are sewer and street department. And that's winter weather and non-winter weather. So, you know, one of the examples is I was very lucky. I was driving to, my parents live on HH, and I felt like a real jerk when I'm driving past my sewer maintenance members who, on Route B, there was a huge sewer main explosion, and they are knee-deep in, well, I can't think.
Sewer.
On Thanksgiving Day, right? So that,
so
it's usually a week at a time.
Oh, so they get assigned a week, and for that week, you can't go out of a certain radius of the city, and you have certain limitations on your ability to, you have to get to work if called in by a certain time?
The radius of the city, I don't think is written in, but it's easily accessible by phone, show up.
And it's a $15 a day.
Yep, and then I think it's 20 on holidays.
So it's 20 on your scheduled day off, and then you get an additional $15.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. All right, other questions for Andrew? I think my questions are mostly for staff, so... Any other questions for Andrew? Andrew, I just really quick, will you remind me some of the areas that your union represents?
Yeah, sure. So
I think it's easy with fire and police. They're pretty much
They're right there, right? Yeah. Yeah. We got a little bit of everything. So the transit department, fleet operations, pretty much all of solid waste. So that's the guys running the bulldozers to actually do the landfill, collection staff, the MRF who does all the recycling. Street department, sewer department, parks and rec, parking folks. I'm missing something.
Airport.
Airport, yes.
Okay.
Always forgot.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's about 240 miles.
Okay.
Oh, and custodial, the people who clean the room. Okay. And building maintenance mechanics. Yeah. I know. I'm still missing.
And
wastewater.
Good Lord. Okay.
Anything that is service and maintenance of the city that is not water or electric. Is that fair? That's fair.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. All right. So now we are moving on to our section. So I move that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri, to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B.